Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello and welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. We're coming to you live from London. I'm Rob Young. We will spend much of this programme looking at the most dramatic and most dangerous moment of the escalating conflict between Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. It's been confirmed the long-time leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, was killed in a massive airstrike on the group's headquarters in the Lebanese capital Beirut on Friday night. Hezbollah said he had been martyred. Israel said he was a terrorist. Here's Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
The state of Israel killed the master murderer Hassan Nasrallah yesterday. We settled accounts with who is responsible for the murder of countless Israelis and many citizens of other countries, including hundreds of Americans and dozens of French citizens.
In Lebanon, displaced people in one district of the capital, Beirut, were distraught when they heard the news. You can hear there one woman crying out the name of the Hezbollah leader. Another woman says she wishes that all of us, as she puts it, had been killed instead of Nasrallah. And across the Middle East, there have been scenes of mourning and of outrage. Here are some protesters in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. Well, Hassan Nasrallah has not been seen in public for years, but he regularly issued video addresses of recorded speeches denouncing Israel and the United States. On September the 19th, in what turned out to be one of his last video addresses, he warned Israel of serious consequences after dozens of people were killed and 3,000 injured when Hezbollah pagers and walkie-talkies exploded.
There is no doubt that the aggression that took place is a major one. And as I said in my speech, it is unprecedented and will be met with tough retribution and just retribution and just punishment, where they expect it and where they do not.
That was Hassan Nasrallah speaking a week and a half ago from a secret location because he was fearful of an Israeli assassination. Israel killed him on Friday. Well, our correspondent Hugo Bechega is in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. How have people reacted to the killing of Hassan Nasrallah?
People are shocked. This is a man who for three decades led Hezbollah, which is often described as a state within a state, one of the most powerful and controversial men in Lebanon. So there is an element of shock, regardless of your political affiliations. It is particularly shocking for those who support Hezbollah. This is the worst moment in the group's history, and we're seeing those images of Hezbollah supporters really, you know, affected by everything that's happening here.
And Israel continues to launch missiles on various targets it believes belong to Hezbollah in Beirut today.
Exactly, and I think the indications that we're seeing from the Israelis is that this campaign against Hezbollah is going to continue. I think they believe that they've been extremely successful so far in degrading Hezbollah, in killing, you know, the leadership of the group, in destroying, you know, the infrastructure that has been built by Hezbollah in the south, also in the east. And I think it's becoming very likely that we're going to see a ground incursion into southern Lebanon to create what the Israelis describe as a buffer zone to destroy what Hezbollah has built in the south, tunnels, bunkers, and push Hezbollah away from the border to create a situation where those 60,000 people who've been displaced because of this violence, to allow them to return home. And I think even though Hassan Nasrallah has been killed, we are not seeing any sign that the Israelis are going to end this campaign against the group.
The BBC's Hugo Bechega in Beirut. Well, Hassan Nasrallah's death is being viewed in Israel as a huge victory. Israel, along with the United States and many Western countries, classify Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. I've been talking to a spokesman for the Israel Defense Forces, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner. What does he think the wider impact of Hassan Nasrallah's death will be?
So I would say, first of all, the strike on Nasrallah itself was a critical part of our military operation. There have been many doors out of this step that Nasrallah himself chose not to go through and to continue his aggression and hostility towards Israel. So the targeted strike against the underground headquarters is part, and against him and his senior commanders, the terrorists that were with him, is an absolutely part of our message that we won't allow the ongoing threat to Israeli civilians who have now been living out of home for almost a year, some 60,000 people. And that's why we feel it was absolutely necessary to push forward in order to take Hezbollah and the threat that they pose, including with their long-range strategic precision-guided missiles, off of the table. We've been going through the motions of diplomacy for the last year, and that was up until this week the chosen route. But we've reached a new decision, and the government instructed the military to ensure that Israelis will be able to get back home, at the 60,000 Israelis. And that's why we conducted a series of strikes.
Rockets are still being fired, though, by Hezbollah in Lebanon into Israel. So what you have been doing so far has not eliminated the threat to Israel. Do you think it will be necessary to send troops into Lebanon?
So Hezbollah has been building its armory, weapons capabilities, its forces for the last 20 years. So there's no quick fix to this development. And indeed, as we speak, there are still rockets coming over. But what I can say is that the strike that conducted against the leadership, and indeed the decapitation of almost all of their senior leaders, commanders, field commanders, operational commanders in the last week, has disrupted their efforts, but not negated and eliminated them completely. So we will see the ongoing actions and ongoing launch of rockets and missiles, and we have even throughout the course of this morning. And of course, the military needs to be prepared for the next stages, and that stage may require ground offensive, ground forces.
More than 700 people in Lebanon have been killed over the past week and a half, according to Lebanon's health minister. This is about allowing 60,000 Israelis to go back to their homes in the north of Israel. Yet we've had well over 100,000 Lebanese forced to flee their homes in the south of Lebanon. What is the price that Israel thinks Lebanon and the Lebanese people should pay to allow Israelis to go back to their homes?
Well, ideally, that question should be reverted to Hezbollah, because they chose on the 8th of October to launch their war on Israel. So all efforts from our perspective continue to be made to minimize civilian harm. All civilian lives in this war that have been lost are tragic. The responsibility for those lives lies squarely with the terrorists who chose to put civilians in harm's way.
Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, spokesperson for the Israel Defense Forces. Well, in Hezbollah strongholds in Beirut, people have been wailing in the streets after hearing the news of Hassan Nasrallah's death. Abir Bassam writes for the Lebanese news website Al-Ahed News, which is owned by Hezbollah. She contacted NewsHour to tell us that Hezbollah had confirmed its leader was dead, and she was clearly very upset when we spoke to her.
Well, now the Hezbollah on El Manar, its official TV, declared the martyrdom of Sayyid Nasrallah. It's the very, very emotional. People in the streets are now screaming and wailing. It's a very unfortunate, I mean, God. And now Israel will see hell, how hell comes on it. Israel will see hell now. It's not going to be okay. Not even close.
You're clearly very upset to learn of the death of Hassan Nasrallah. Just tell us why he meant so much to you and other people in Lebanon.
It's not only that his personality or his character or what he represents. He represents the liberation of South Lebanon and the end of an Israeli occupation that lasted for more than 25 years. The Islamic resistance ended an Israeli aggression on Lebanon. And now it's going all over again.
How do you think Hezbollah will be able to operate without Hassan Nasrallah as its head?
Hezbollah will operate. I mean, Sayyid Abbas Mousawi was assassinated by Israel as well. And look where we reached, how the resistance, how strong it became. Can you imagine how stronger it will become after his martyrdom? Someone will come, will lead the party, and everything will go as it is planned.
When you said before that Hezbollah will unleash hell on Israel, what do you mean by that?
Now everyone is a possible target. I believe that.
Abia Bassam, well, let's get some context to her final remark. Dr. Lina Khatib is director of the SOAS Middle East Institute in London. How likely is it that the view we heard there will be shared by many other Lebanese?
News of Nasrallah's killing was announced. I was on the phone to a journalist in Lebanon who just said, someone across the hall just started crying inconsolably. Something must have happened. And then we found out it was Nasrallah's killing announcement by Hezbollah. So yeah, certainly. This kind of reaction is, I think, genuine amongst Hezbollah's constituents who used to see in Nasrallah a larger than life father figure, savior figure. They idolized him. And I think they never thought they would see this day come.
We heard before the death of Hassan Nasrallah was announced that perhaps a majority of people in Lebanon do not like Hezbollah. They do not like the influence it has in the country. So will a lot of people in Lebanon welcome a blow to an organization they dislike?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say roughly 2/3 of the Lebanese population does not like Hezbollah. But that doesn't mean that they necessarily wanted to see, Hezbollah weakened in this particular way. I think the majority of people in Lebanon do not want to see conflict in their country and would have preferred to see a diplomatic way out of Lebanon's political woes. However, having said that, of course, they will be probably a bit relieved that Nasrallah is out of the picture. But at the same time, they are also aware that the killing of Hezbollah's leader, Nasrallah, does not automatically mean the collapse of Hezbollah itself. And so we have to be a bit measured in, how welcome this news will be in Lebanon.
Dr. Lina Khatib, and we'll hear from her again in a few minutes when she'll tell us more about Hassan Nasrallah and the years that he spent leading Hezbollah in Lebanon. You're listening to the BBC World Service, and this is NewsHour. Coming up later, our international editor Jeremy Bowen will assess the impact of the killing of Hassan Nasrallah.
It's a huge moment. It's a huge moment because of the stature of the man among his followers and the fact that for Israel, he has been in so many ways public enemy number one for a very long time. He presided over Hezbollah as it was built into a very formidable fighting force with the help of Iran.
A reminder of our main headlines. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has hailed the killing of the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah in Beirut as a historic turning point that will help Israel achieve its war goals. US President Biden said Nasrallah's death was a measure of justice for his victims, but the US would continue working to de-escalate the conflict. This is Rob Young with NewsHour live from the BBC in London. Well, let's look now at who Hassan Nasrallah was. As Hezbollah leader for 32 years, he built the group into a powerful political and military force with funding and weapons from Iran. He was one of the best known and most influential figures in the Middle East. He regularly issued fiery video addresses, but hadn't been seen in public for years because he feared being assassinated by Israel. Well, let's hear more from Dr. Lina Khatib, director of the SOAS Middle East Institute in London. I asked her whether Hassan Nasrallah had more power than either the Lebanese president or prime minister.
Lebanon these days does not have a president and only a caretaker prime minister. But even when it did have a bona fide president and not just a caretaker cabinet, Hezbollah was de facto in charge of the country in many ways. It did not control it formally, but informally. And part of this control happened through intimidation. And Hezbollah was leaning on this ability to inflict terror amongst its opponents to claim this political power. Nasrallah, of course, represented the might of Hezbollah for its opponents and its allies alike, actually, in Lebanon and beyond.
And so how crucial was he in building up Hezbollah into the military and political force that it is today?
Decisions are taken by a group of people within Hezbollah as well as with involvement by Iran. And this setup has allowed Hezbollah to continue despite the various setbacks in its history, such as the assassination of Nasrallah's predecessor in 1992. But certainly with Nasrallah having been the longest serving Secretary General of Hezbollah, being at the helm at a time when Hezbollah's military strength grew exponentially after its last war with Israel in 2006, being there when Hezbollah declared its two big victories against Israel, one being 2006 and the previous one being the 2000 withdrawal of Israeli troops from southern Lebanon after occupying the country for almost two decades. Hezbollah had claimed a lot of credibility because of his involvement in this. And also he played a role in mentoring other groups backed by Iran in the region, like the Houthis in Yemen. So definitely he wasn't just a bureaucratic figure.
What do you think this moment potentially means for the region?
Because Hezbollah is Iran's most valuable asset in the region, the strongest armed group that Iran supports in the region, the fact that Hezbollah has been shown to be so weak by Israel will actually be terrifying for all those other groups in the region who will now be concerned about their security because they are all more junior to Hezbollah in terms of numbers, in terms of power. And in many ways, this is also a moral blow to those groups. So I think we may be beginning to see a new era in which Iran's relatively comfortable influence in the Middle East is being shaken.
And what about Lebanon and ordinary Lebanese people? What responsibility does Hassan Nasrallah bear for some of the dire conditions that many Lebanese have been living in since that port explosion and the kind of almost complete collapse of the economy that we've witnessed in recent years?
I would put Hezbollah at the top of the list of culprits. Of course, the problems in Lebanon are not down to any one group in the country's political elite. In fact, systemic corruption in the country helped Hezbollah rise to become the country's most powerful political and military actor. So, you know, the complicity is quite wide in this very toxic dynamic. However, it is Hezbollah that has dragged Lebanon into this current confrontation with Israel. It is Hezbollah that took its troops to fight in Syria to help the Assad regime. And this catalyzed all kinds of catastrophes, amongst which is the rise of Islamist jihadist extremists in Syria, who also came to threaten Lebanon's stability. And also Hezbollah having the veto in the Lebanese cabinet, not allowing the political process to move forward to elect a president. All these things Nasrallah was partly responsible for.
Dr. Lina Khatib, there, director of the SOAS Middle East Institute in London. Well, Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati has said his country is facing the threat of danger. He also announced that all state-run institutions would be closed on Monday. The country is dealing with a lot. As well as the death of the Hezbollah leader, more than 100,000 Lebanese have left their homes because of Israeli strikes. The economy has been in a dire state for years. The country doesn't even have a president. Dr. Najat Saliba is a member of parliament in Lebanon and is also an academic. What is her reaction to the killing of Hassan Nasrallah?
Hassan Nasrallah, whether we like it or not, he was a leader and he rallied so many people around him. He was charismatic, of course. And I wish he geared all this energy towards building the country rather than fighting the enemy.
What impact do you think his death will have on Lebanon?
The people who followed him are going to be devastated. At the end of the day, it's really an unknown right now how things are going to turn around, especially that Iran still has a great influence on the Hezbollah followers. We do hope that we can, together as Lebanese, stand together strong to form a state that is sovereign and protected by the Lebanese army forces. We definitely condemn all the atrocities and the killing that Israel has been doing on Lebanon for the past week. And this is really very destructive, and it's a scenario of Gaza all over again. With all the justifications that were used for Gaza, they are now used for Lebanon. I don't think anything that Israel wants justifies the collapse of the buildings and the bombing of the buildings in such a very, very cruel way. At the same time, the only way we can really protect this country by standing with the state, with building a state and with the reforms, starting with electing a president and forming a ministerial cabinet that is not a caretaker government.
Which could have happened, could it not, had Hezbollah not interfered, as some people regarded it, in the political process to block the appointment of a president?
I mean, yes, it's not a straight line. What you're describing is not really simple. I agree with you that we could have, you know, saved ourselves all this hassle by standing together, electing a president and strengthening our state, definitely.
The Israeli military say they are day by day degrading Hezbollah's military capabilities. Do you think it could get to a situation where the Lebanese army is perhaps able to take a role in disarming Hezbollah?
I think diplomatic efforts and discussions are going to solve the problem and not violence. And it's not the first time that Israel used such a horrific violence against the Palestinians or against the Lebanese. And time again, it has been proven that this is only fueling hatred and more violence, more massacres, more bloodshed. And it's not the way to solve the problem. It's definitely not the way.
How is Beirut coping with the large number of people who've gone to the capital from the south of the country?
We have over 500,000 displaced people. This is not easy considering the economic collapse that we have seen, considering all the lack of resources. It's definitely a huge challenge. But on the other hand, people here are really welcoming everyone, helping each other in order for us to really embrace the people and help them and save them from staying outside in the streets.
That was Dr. Najat Saliba there, who is a member of parliament in Lebanon, as well as an academic, talking to us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. In the past few minutes, the Lebanese health ministry has said that 33 people were killed and 195 wounded in Israeli strikes on Lebanon on Saturday. We'll have more analysis of the situation in the next half hour of the programme.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Now, it is just over a month until Americans vote in what's turned into a very tight presidential election. The vice president, Kamala Harris, who's running for the Democrats, has been in Arizona on the border with Mexico, pledging to spend millions of dollars on tougher border security. But can Kamala Harris, who's been in office for over 3 years, convincingly present herself as the one to tackle the issue? Our North America editor, Sarah Smith, has been finding out.
Somos amigos! Somos Samaritanos!
What were you saying?
That we're friends and we're Samaritans.
Gail Kocurek is a volunteer who drives down to the southern border to hand out food and water to migrants who are on the Mexican side.
Hola.
Hola.
As she shouts, a small group of men emerged from the undergrowth where they were waiting until nightfall before crossing into the US.
Masawa, un momento.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One 20-year-old Mexican man, who told us to call him Miguel, explained why he feels the need to risk entering the U.S. illegally.
I only go to work. I want to help to my family for give them a better life. I want to pay taxes. I want to work by the legal way.
But you'll be in America everything. Illegally and working illegally. Why is that better than working in Mexico?
Because in the United States, you can save a little more.
We were talking through a large gap in the infamous border wall. It won't be difficult for Miguel and his companions to walk over into America, but it could be dangerous. It's nearly 40 degrees, and hundreds of migrants die in the desert heat every year. Kamala Harris once called Donald Trump's beloved wall a medieval vanity project. But now she's promising more security, aware that this is her weakest electoral issue.
What's this?
This is a water trough. I put in a drinking fountain for anybody who wants to come by and get a drink of water.
Jim Chiltern is an Arizona rancher who wants to stop migrants crossing onto his enormous 50,000-acre property. But he still provides drinking water because he also doesn't want people dying on his land.
In 2023, we had 3 people die on the ranch. And how many more are out there? I mean, 50,000 acres? How many dead bodies are out there that have never been found? No one deserves to die of dehydration. It's outrageous. That's why we need to secure the border.
He has set up motion-activated cameras that show thousands of people crossing his ranch every year. And he does not believe that if elected, Kamala Harris would stop them and secure that border.
And now she's changing her mind just to get votes and lie to us. Outrageous.
Why are you so sure it's a lie?
I've seen the evidence. We've had an open...
The landscape here in southern Arizona is vast and beautiful. It's also a key electoral battleground, territory where Ms. Harris knows she is vulnerable. That's why she's hoping to convince voters that she would get tough on immigration, which is, of course, Donald Trump's signature issue.
Our North America editor Sarah Smith there reporting from the US-Mexico border. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC. I'm Rob Young. The killing by Israel of the leader of Hezbollah is a serious blow to the Lebanese militant group and is seen as a major military success for Israel. It's almost a year since the attacks by Hamas on Israel sparked the war in Gaza. Hezbollah started firing on Israel the day after those attacks in support of Hamas. Israel is now fighting on 2 fronts, with troops in Gaza in the south and with airstrikes in Lebanon to the north. So what do Israelis make of the dramatic developments of recent days? I've been speaking to Tal Schneider, the political correspondent at the Times of Israel newspaper. Is it possible yet to gauge Israeli public opinion about the killing of Hezbollah's leader?
I think the Israeli public is well satisfied with this event. Hassan Nasrallah was this big threat, household name. I mean, he was on our TVs days and night lecturing against us and obviously implementing his horrific agenda. I mean, we've been suffering from this person for over 30 years now. He was, for us, the face of Lebanon. I mean, nobody knows the name of the president or the prime minister, but everybody knows that Hassan Nasrallah sits in his desk and just curse us for, you know, over and over again, but also throwing rockets at us, conducting all of those operations, kidnapping soldiers, slaughtering people. We have internally displaced people because of those attacks on Israel north. So it's a huge day, but you don't see here
joyful reaction on the streets or anything like that, because we have 101 hostages in Gaza still, and we have war.
Are people concerned about the prospect of Hezbollah retaliating, potentially about an Iranian direct attack on Israel?
Definitely. People are very, very concerned about any type of retaliation. But let me tell you this, it's been very harsh for a year now. So, you know, whenever we hear the world saying this war might spread around for the entire Middle East, it's already spreading all over Israel. I mean, we get, you know, rockets from Yemen, from Iraq. It's all Iranian-backed militias. We just had a huge rocket falling off of a road in eastern Israel. It came from Yemen, and this is an Iranian missile.
You mentioned Gaza and the hostages there. Do people feel that the government is still focused on its initial two stated war aims, which were eliminating Hamas and bringing home the Israeli hostages in Gaza? Or do people feel that the government's focus has perhaps drifted northwards to Lebanon?
We're definitely worried from the drift into Lebanon. Gaza is supposed to be the main focus, and bringing the hostages back. You know, I think in a couple of days after we realized that Nasrallah has really gone, I think this reality will sink in and people will realize that with the big change in Lebanon, we do not see the required prospect for a future in the southern part.
Mm. There has been quite vehement criticism of the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in recent months, that some people said he was prolonging the conflict in Gaza, not doing some kind of deal to bring the hostages home and end the war, to try to continue his time in office with the support of far-right and ultra-nationalist parties. Has that criticism gone away in recent days?
We didn't poll right after the Nasrallah killing, but people said time and time again during, you know, recent 6 months or so, that he is making political decision and not security-based decision with respect to the southern part of Israel and with the hostages. So that's a big, you know, issue here. Having said that, with Lebanon, it seems a little bit different at the moment. You actually see a government and IDF that perform very differently. They were not performing in the south. No, you know, results were not good. Now in the northern part of Israel, the performance and the execution is almost perfect. And you people asking themselves, how can it be? Is it the same government, the same IDF?
Do you think there would be an appetite for a ground invasion, for Israeli troops to be sent into Lebanon?
Oh, I think there is no appetite for ground invasion. Having said that, you know, the goal is to have people go back to their homes. Those internally displaced people need to go back to their homes. And you got to ask yourself, how can you do that? How do you achieve that? I mean, if the Hezbollah terror organization is sitting right on the border, how do you push them away? You can push them away maybe with a diplomatic arrangement. The question is, what's the leverage on them? Because if you negotiate with the Lebanese government, they have no influence or leverage on Hezbollah. Does the Iranian have leverage on them? We don't know. So how can you trust that to happen?
Tal Schneider there, political correspondent at the Times of Israel. Well, the US President Joe Biden has described Hassan Nasrallah's killing as a measure of justice for his many victims. He said these include thousands of Americans, Israelis and Lebanese civilians. The United States is Israel's closest ally. We can speak now to Aaron David Miller, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, focusing on U.S. foreign policy. He also worked for the U.S. State Department for more than two decades, where he worked on policies on the Middle East and the Arab-Israel peace process. Welcome to NewsHour. Is the U.S. a player in this crisis in the Middle East, or was it watching it all unfold?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the last 11 months, the administration has succeeded in certain areas and not succeeded in others. Its primary accomplishment over the course of the last year is we marked the first year of this war, it's hard to believe that it's still going on, is to avoid and to manage through containment and deterrence an escalation in the north. Now that is clearly in jeopardy. So I think right now there is no diplomatic off-ramp here. To give the Israelis the benefit of the doubt on this, they probably undertook this operation in order to change Hezbollah's calculations, to basically demonstrate you can keep your high-trajectory weapons. We don't care if you rule in Lebanon. But the reality is you've got to come to some arrangement on the south that guarantees security for the 70,000 to 80,000 residents that are Israeli residents that are now displaced. Now, whether or not the events of the last 2 weeks will produce that change in Hezbollah's calculation and in Iranian calculation remains to be seen. The Israelis are moving men and equipment up to the northern border. And I suspect that if with next week, maybe even sooner, if there is no change in Hezbollah's calculation, they may actually try limited ground operation. I don't have much confidence, though, that any of these steps are going to create the kind of security for the inhabitants of northern Israel to make that border one that Hezbollah won't cross or won't continue to shell. That's the real challenge right
now. Well, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis in Yemen, Iran, Israel all face key decisions in the coming days and weeks, don't they? The United States does, in theory, have sway over Israel, yet we've had Israel reject a US proposal for a ceasefire over the Lebanese border. We've had US official after official today and says they didn't know about the attack on Hassan Nasrallah beforehand. What realistically can the US do to try to de-escalate this situation?
I get this question all the time. How come in 11 months hasn't the United States imposed a single cost or consequence on Israel that normal humans would regard as significant or sustained pressure? We don't have enough time to explore the reasons for that. But I only point this out. I do a lot of BBC, and I'll use Britain as an example. I cannot think of a single incident in recent years where the United States deployed significant and serious pressure on any ally, friend, or partner when that ally, friend, or partner considered their vital interests at stake. We don't leverage our allies. We just restored $320 million of assistance to the authoritarian government of Abdel Fattah el-Sisi in Egypt as a consequence of his human rights violations. But we've just restored the $320 million because the Egyptians have been very helpful in trying to negotiate an Israeli-Hamas ceasefire. We don't leverage our allies. And if we don't leverage our allies that have very little political resonance, domestic political resonance in the U.S., there's no way any American president is going to create a situation to get involved in a major fight with Israel. And we're now 45 days out from one of the most consequential elections in modern American history. And there's no way this administration, or I would argue any administration, would seek to impose the kinds of costs and consequences that might, not true, would work, that might in fact alter Israel's behavior.
Thank you.
That's just a reality. And I keep getting the same question over and over and over again. I keep answering the same way. It's not
and we appreciate your answer.
But it's
Thanks
real.
Very much indeed. Good to talk to you again. Aaron David Miller, their senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Well, our international editor, Jeremy Bowen, has covered the Middle East for decades. He joined us earlier from Jerusalem and asked him how big a moment the killing of Hezbollah's leader is for the wider region.
It's a huge moment. It's a huge moment because of the stature of the man among his followers and the fact that for Israel, he has been in so many ways public enemy number one for a very long time. He presided over Hezbollah as it was built into a very formidable fighting force with the help of Iran. It made the occupation of Lebanon in the 1980s and 90s so difficult for the Israelis that in 2000 they pulled out. 2006 there was a war in which they fought Israel pretty much to a standstill. Since then, he has been more of a controversial figure inside Lebanon because Hezbollah has been seen, it used to be seen, 2006 he was seen as a national hero by many people, but then Hezbollah became rather overmighty, cruel, difficult, oppressive, and that made him less popular among people who weren't part of his true faithful. But, you know, the Israelis are cock-a-hoop about this because this is a man who they saw as an absolute symbol of all those people who are out to destroy them, Iran and its allies, and they see this correctly as an enormous blow to that Iran-led alliance.
It's an enormous blow. Is it a decisive blow, or does it, in reality, not change much on the conflict that has taken place?
Well, we don't know really. I mean, it's getting slightly into the realms of speculation to try and predict the way things will go. But I think what we can say is that they are not about to surrender, Hezbollah. And the Israelis have reflected that because there's just been a briefing by the army, the Israeli army, in which they announced that they are banning public gatherings of more than 1,000 people, that they're telling people to be careful, stay close to their shelters. So they clearly are expecting some kind of a response, a fierce one potentially. But I think from the other side, from those commanders who remain in Hezbollah and the undoubted younger generation who will rise up to take some of these posts, since so many of the senior figures have been killed in the last few months, they might, with the Iranians, think, well, hang on a minute, if we try and just throw everything at Israel, they'll just hit us even harder, and maybe even the Americans will get involved. So they don't want that. They might try a more clever response, but now I'm getting to the realms of speculation because I have no idea really what's going through their heads, except I think what we have to know, what we must realize, is they will be reeling now from an absolutely seismic blow.
That was our international editor, Jeremy Boner, joining us from Jerusalem. You're listening to the BBC World Service, and this is NewsHour. A reminder of our top story this hour. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has hailed the killing of the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah in Beirut as a historic turning point that will help Israel achieve its war goals.
Medinat Israel chisla etmol et rav ha-meratzchim Hassan Nasrallah.
The state of Israel killed the master murderer Hassan Nasrallah yesterday. We settled accounts with who is responsible for the murder of countless Israelis and many citizens of other countries, including hundreds of Americans and dozens of French citizens.
President Biden said Nasrallah's death was a measure of justice for his victims, but said the US would continue working to de-escalate the conflict. As Israel's bombardment of Lebanon continues, Hezbollah says the loss of its leader will not stop it from fighting on. This is Rob Young with NewsHour, live from the BBC in London. A key question now, following the death of Hassan Nasrallah, is how will Iran respond? Iran funds and arms Hezbollah, which is part of what is called the Axis of Resistance, along with Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis in Yemen, and other militias across the region. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has declared 5 days of public mourning for Hassan Nasrallah and said his death would not go unavenged. He published this statement on his official website, which one of my colleagues will read out.
It's incumbent upon all Muslims to stand by the people of Lebanon and the proud Hezbollah with whatever means they have and assist them in confronting the usurping, oppressive and wicked regime. By the grace of God, Lebanon will make the invading, wicked and discredited enemy regret their actions. The fate of this region will be determined by the forces of resistance, with Hezbollah at the forefront.
Iranian state media have said that a senior commander of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps was also killed in Friday night's attack in Beirut. Until now, Iran has largely stayed on the sidelines of the recent flare-up in the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, relying instead on its proxy forces to attack Israel. So what is the view in Tehran now? Dr. Saeed Mohammed Mirandi is from the University of Tehran and has links with the Iranian government. He spoke to us from Beirut.
I think Iran will punish the Israeli regime. I think the regime is underestimating the power and wrath of Iran. This is going to be a major miscalculation. And I think the days and weeks ahead will show that Iran is determined to make sure that the regime does not defeat the people of Palestine or the people of Lebanon through this genocidal conduct. Iran will not allow the West to beat and batter the people of Lebanon and Gaza through their weapons.
Of course, Israel has denied any accusation of genocide. But when you say that Iran is determined to ensure that its forces are not beaten, do you suspect there would be a direct Iranian response, or would Iran rely on its proxy forces, on Hezbollah, on Hamas, on the Houthis and others?
These are not proxies. These are Iranian allies. Those forces that the West usually use to carry out terror attacks in our region, those are proxies. These are allies who are defending their land, their territory. They're blocking genocide.
But
they're
would there be a direct Iranian response, in your view?
I think that the Iranians will give a very punishing response. I'm not a government official, so I can't speak on behalf of anyone. But I think we will see the consequences of Iran's response. You will see it, I will see it, and everyone will see it.
Dr. Saeed Mohammed Mirandi there from the University of Tehran. Well, let's get another view now on what Iran is likely to do. Frazan Sabat is a senior research associate at the Global Governance Center in Geneva in Switzerland, which focuses on Middle East security.
Iran, generally speaking, has three options. One would be to back down, which I think is highly unlikely to do. By back down, I mean that basically pressure Lebanese Hezbollah to stand down on its unification of the front's strikes in northern Israel and against Israel, the rest of Israel proper, in solidarity with the front in Gaza and with Hamas, and for Iran also to not carry out retaliatory steps. I think that that first option is highly unlikely because the current leadership of the Islamic Republic, whether it's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei or the senior leadership of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, or the kind of core of the Islamic Republic system, are highly committed to the acts of resistance and to the conflict with Israel at an ideological level. Second option would be to try to stay the course, that is, continue to carry out kind of lower intensity operations and strikes using rockets, some missiles, and drones against Israel, which they've been doing since basically the 8th of October in the case of Lebanese Hezbollah, and for Iran to also carry out certain, let's say, symbolic strikes. For this possibility is not unlikely, but both domestically and it's in terms of its regional and international reputation, the Islamic Republic's leadership will feel under enormous pressure to escalate, to basically not to back down or not to stay the course in the types of attacks it's been doing, but to carry out a kind of a stronger retaliatory strike.
Right. And so what does escalation look like from Iran's perspective? Does it involve Iran striking Israel directly?
I think just a one caveat for kind of escalation. An important factor is that a senior Islamic Revolution Guard Corps general was also killed or appears to have been killed alongside Hassan Nasrallah. So a significant factor is that it's not only a very senior acts of resistance partner, but actually potentially a senior IRGC general, which it seems to have been confirmed by the Iranian media, who's been killed. So an escalatory strike would be, for example, something along the lines of what we saw on the 13th and 14th April, large-scale missile and drone strikes, but using either larger quantities or more sophisticated weapons that in this instance would inflict real substantive damage on Israel.
But you're not suggesting it would be an Iranian attack from Iranian soil on Israel directly?
That's not off the table.
But it's not likely.
I think it's less likely than to, you know, staying the course and doing a more symbolic attack. So even if they do strike directly from Iran itself, will the strike be as large as that which happened on 13th and 14th of April? That was, about, I think, between 300 to 400 systems that were launched in terms of UAVs and missiles. I think it seems at the moment, at least, that it's less likely to be that type of attack.
So Iran then is not going to go to the aid of Hamas or of Hezbollah. That's dangerous for Hezbollah, isn't it?
So let's get something straight, right? Of course, the Islamic Republic's support for Hezbollah has made the organization a major power in the Levant and within Lebanon. But at the end of the day, Lebanese Hezbollah was intended to be forward defense and deterrent structure for Iran and not the other way around. Of course, if the capabilities of Lebanese Hezbollah and its abilities to operate effectively are seriously disrupted and eroded, in that instance, it would be highly damaging to to Iran's kind of deterrence posture in the region.
How does all of this fit in with what we heard from the new Iranian president at the United Nations this week, that Iran wants peace with the West?
I think that has to be potentially seen in a context where the current Iranian leadership, and especially the new president, are seeking to avoid escalatory scenario in which the country faces even greater military and especially economic pressure than it has in the past. President Pezeshkian's agenda and how effectively he'll be able to carry out remains to be seen. But certainly an escalation in regional tensions, including direct Iran-Israel tit-for-tat strikes, would be highly damaging for his agenda and could potentially completely destroy kind of any prospects for nuclear negotiations if the escalation goes too far.
Middle East security expert there, Frazan Sabat, which brings us to the end of this edition of NewsHour. Thanks for listening.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.